What's going on? This is Alex Pardo. You're listening to episode 368 on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go, while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. Welcome back, my friend. This is Alex, and I got an awesome masterclass for you here with my buddy, Mr. Mike Wagner. We just finished recording this episode, and I cannot wait for you to listen to this thing. Such a joy and pleasure to have this guy on. Just dropping so many nuggets and just sharing such wisdom. If you don't know Mike Wagner, he's a self-storage expert. I mean, this guy owns many, many facilities, many units. And what's really cool is how he has carved out such expertise in a very niche, unique space of real estate investing. And he's used this as a platform to really pour into others. And not only to teach people the self-storage business and how it could truly provide wealth for them, but really, Mike is a lifestyle guy, you know, and he subscribes to the thought that it's bigger is not always better. You're going to hear how us talking about better is better and how less is more. And, you know, just true honor to have him on. I mean, we have so much in common, and also a fellow lifenaire and somebody who has a very clear vision for what he wants out of life and chases happiness and has found happiness. And self-storage has just been a vehicle and a platform to provide for his family, you know, give him the type of lifestyle he wants, and also to pour into others. So many nuggets, so much wisdom that was shared on this episode. And so I'm excited to just dive right into it, my friends. Hope you enjoy it. Mike Wagner, what is going on, my friend? How you doing, brother?
I'm really well, man. How are you?
I'm blessed, man. Super blessed. And it is awesome reconnecting with you. I know you and I met through a mutual friend of ours and my partner, Steve Cavanaugh. And man, I have, throughout the years, I have heard nothing but just people sing your high praises. You and I are both a part of the Life and Air community. And I see what you've been doing with your, you know, with your self-storage deals. And so on this particular podcast, we're definitely going to talk self-storage investing. Because when I think self-storage, you're one of two people that I think of. And anybody interested or you know, who's never been exposed to investing in self-storage, I think they need to connect with you. So we're definitely going to touch on, you know, some of the deals you're involved in. And I'm curious, because most people start out with single family. And I'd love to hear, because I don't even know your backstory, how you even got into self-storage. I think that'd be really interesting. And I definitely want to talk a lot of mindset and lifestyle stuff, because I know you're a big lifestyle guy, and I think people can get a lot out of, you know, just your unique perspective and the experience that you've acquired throughout the years. So, yeah, man, I'm excited. It's awesome having you on the show.
Hey, as am I, man, and I appreciate you having me. It's I love nothing more than talking shop.
I love it. I love it. So, dude, why don't we get into, you know, and we don't need to spend too much time on this, because I want to get to the meat sooner rather than later, but just so people have some context and some background. How'd you get into real estate, and then what niche did you get into? Single families initially? Kind of want to start your journey as how you got introduced and exposed to real estate investing.
Yeah, absolutely. Very briefly, I, in a former life, was a physical therapist by trade. And as much as I like the job, I knew that real estate was responsible for making more millionaires than any other industry. And so through Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, all that stuff, I got exposed to real estate in general. And I started in the small multifamily world. So two to four families. This was back in 2007. I bought my first house. And my plan was to have 100 houses, each making $100 a month. And at the time I thought that would be, that would just be freedom forever. And I'd live happily ever after. Fast forward 3.5, 4 years, I had done well enough. But I don't know if you or your viewers have ever experienced this. Things worked out in the real world, not quite as optimistic as I had penciled it out on paper. And so my 100 houses needed to be 150, and I was only at 31. So long story short, I realized that the rental houses weren't getting me where I wanted to go fast enough.
Okay.
And so I started looking around for other real estate-based alternatives, and that's when I stumbled on storage.
Got it. Got it. Was there a big mindset shift that you had to adopt or overcome to transition from single family to something very niche like self-storage?
That's an excellent question. And I wouldn't say that it was the transition itself that required the mindset shift. But when I transitioned, I had been doing rental real estate kind of evenings and weekends in addition to being a physical therapist. And when I made the shift to self-storage, I went all in. I actually quit my job as a physical therapist the day I bought my first storage facility.
Really?
And at the time, that facility was losing $2,000 a month. So we weren't dipping our toes in the water. I don't want to be overly dramatic, but I was fed up and I just realized that the risk of staying in a job that was unfulfilling and I kind of felt trapped in was a far greater risk than me making a mess of my financial life and kind of taking a chance on forging my own path.
Now, just so I have an idea, did you have at this point where you closed on your first self-storage facility, did you have a family? Like, what did life look like for you there? And the reason I asked that before you answer, Mike, is because I'm confident that there's people listening to this right now that are in a similar place to where you were years ago that want to get out of their job, or maybe they're wholesalers, or maybe they're in the single family business and just it's not what they thought it might be. And they're looking at an alternative. They're looking at a better way, but yet they're having a challenge making that leap. So I'm kind of curious, A, what was going on in your life at that point that, you know, you just got to the point where you're like, hey, the pain of staying here is greater than taking a risk. And what advice would you have for people that might be in a similar place to where you were years ago?
Sure. And I'll be the first to admit I was very fortunate that I kind of came to this crossroads in my life before I had too deep a hole as far as responsibilities and overhead and those sorts of things. It was my wife and I, we were married. We had a small, very modest house that we could afford relatively comfortably. And long story short, we spent considerably less than we made. And so we were in a position to take the risk. We also didn't have kids at the time. So there wasn't that added responsibility, which I certainly acknowledge. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend that folks, that the way I did it would be the right way for anybody else to do it. Now, there are certainly some folks who are in a position to take the risk and comfortable taking it. I wouldn't discourage them necessarily, but I don't want to give the impression that it was a rash decision that I was making. It was very calculated. My wife and I had weighed the pros and cons and really thought it through.
Okay.
That being said, I've learned so much in the storage industry over the last 8 years that back then I thought that's what was required. I didn't think I could do it part-time to start. Now that I've learned and adopted a bunch of remote management strategies that we utilize in storage, someone can absolutely keep their 9-to-5, get started in storage, and then do more of a gradual transition out of their former life into their new life.
Okay. Okay. Let me ask, so before we get into like A, why storage, and B, I'd love to hear about that first deal. What did you do with your existing single family portfolio? Because I think I heard you say you had about 30 or so properties.
I had 31 apartments. It was a total of 13 properties.
Okay.
And they were making us money. So I wasn't in a position to need to fire sale them or get rid of them. I had gotten to the point where I had outsourced the management. And so that pain point was considerably less than it was when I was doing it myself.
I know what that's like.
Yeah. And so essentially we just opportunistically sold them off.
Okay.
Over the course of, I guess I sold my last one in 2016. So over the course of the first 4 or 5 years where I was already into storage, we transitioned out of that. And then at the end, there were a couple dogs that I just said,
sure,
I don't care if I'm losing 10 grand and paying taxes on them. I don't want them in my world anymore.
And you know what, brother? There's such a gold nugget that's kind of hidden behind what you just said. Many people want to hold on because they don't want to lose money or because they're not making as much money as they might think. But I think certain times you have to be calculated and it's better to take an L on paper, but free you up mentally and allow you to focus on what you know is your calling or focus on what you, the direction you're going in. You know what I'm saying? Like, can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think sometimes, I guess it's the whole, you got to know when to cut your losses, when to hold them, when to fold them type analogy. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on, is there a process you go through or is there, you know, something that you think through when deciding, hey, it's time to just cut my losses and move on and focus versus, no, let me hold on to this and try to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will tell you, I am extremely guilty of once upon a time just using a financial thermometer as my decision-making criteria. If it made money, I kept doing it. If it lost money, I got rid of it. I am much more conscious now, thankfully, to what I call the non-financial consequences of our financial decisions. So,
can you repeat that again?
Let's say the non-financial consequences of our financial decisions.
I love that.
So the example is that house that I sold losing $10,000 to get rid of it. That was a financial decision and a financial loss. But the non-financial consequences of keeping that house were depleted energy, high blood pressure, stress, anxiety, all of these things that I finally got to the point where I was more than happy to lose 10 grand to fix all of those things that it was, those impacts that it was having on the rest of my life.
Mike, that's fascinating to me because so many people that you and I know, you just said, I think you used the words financial thermometer. They base their decisions based on dollars and cents. And I think when you do that, you're putting yourself at a huge disadvantage because you're not valuing what's even more important, which is your mental health or how you feel, how you operate. And we both know that that has a significant impact and ripple effect on every other aspect of our life. So I'm so glad you said that because I think the takeaway that I'd like people to get from this part of the conversation is don't make decisions purely based on the numbers and on the cash. Yes, that is a big factor many times, but sometimes, and in many cases, that shouldn't be the first or even second factor in a decision-making process. So I'm glad to hear you say that. Let me kind of start to transition now into that first deal you closed. I think you mentioned you had quit your job as a physical therapist when you closed on that facility. How long had you been educating yourself on self-storage leading up to that point? I guess I'm kind of curious if, you know, you said it was losing money. Was it, did you just say, hey, let me burn the ships and I'm going to learn kind of trial by fire? Or how much knowledge and experience did you have leading up to that point?
No, I had certainly done my homework. I don't remember exactly, but I was probably exploring the industry for at least 12 to 18 months. And okay. I was actively pursuing it. And I did what I needed to get smart on the industry in a very serious way, right? I spent 6 to 9 months getting smart, looking for deals. I had 2 or 3 under contract prior to the one that I finally got across the finish line. So I think there's a lesson in perseverance there.
Sure.
And I did in some aspects burn the ships. I actually, without getting into too much detail, I had a license to practice as a physical therapist.
Okay.
And I made the intentional decision that that license was up for renewal just 6 months after I bought my first storage facility. And a friend of mine told me, well, if you jump out of an airplane with a parachute, you'll probably pull the ripcord. And I said, well, I don't want to do that. I said, what do you do if you jump out of an airplane without a parachute? And there's a couple different answers. You either learn to fly or you learn to build a new plane. And I did kind of force myself into that situation because I knew I never wanted to be tempted to go back to my old life.
I love that, man. There is that that there's so much value in what you just shared. It's the whole classic, you know, jump off the cliff and build your wings on the way down. And I think it really speaks to oftentimes, you know, I've talked on this show quite a bit about setting up our environment for success from the moment we wake up, you know, owning the morning, and it just sets the tone for the rest of the day. And the kind of the hacks in life, I'm not really a big fan of the word hacks, but what I heard you say was that you eliminated that option. Right? Because if you would have renewed your license, it would have been your quote unquote safety net, which ultimately sounds like it really would have been your demise. It would have been going in a direction that's not the vision you had for your life, it sounds like.
Absolutely. And a lot of people would say my decision was impractical. And I can't argue with that. They might have some validity to that opinion. But there's this quote I love that talks about practicality is often just a disguise for fear. And I didn't want to stay in the realm that I had lived in for the first 30 years of my life. I wanted to forge my own path. And like I said, I was willing to take the risk.
Yeah. Good for you, brother. Good for you. So at this point, you close on your first facility. You said it was losing about $2,000. This was back in 2016, you said?
No, this purchase was in 2011.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. 2011. So walk me through that first deal. Did you jump into that by yourself? What did that deal look like?
Yeah, I was the sole owner of the property. I did buy it myself. I had scraped together $40,000 in equity from three of my rental houses that I still had. Okay. I raised about $60,000 privately, mm-hmm. and then got a bank loan for the remaining. So we bought it for $330,000 plus closing costs. We were all in for $350,000.
How many units? And
No, $350,000 to buy 100 units.
Okay.
And I'm sorry. Well, it was 75 indoor units and 75 parking spots. It was 10,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. And it was about 50% full. And when I say we were losing $2,000 a month, that was inclusive of my debt service.
Okay.
It was about, give or take, break even from an income to expense standpoint, but then I had to service the debt.
Understood. What I probably should have asked before I even asked that question, let me kind of take a few steps back, if you don't mind. Why self-storage? Like, talk a little bit about, I'm curious of, you could have done, you know, you started with, I think you said a duplex or a fourplex, right? The natural progression for many people is, hey, multifamily. And that seems to be the really hot niche right now, right? Even though obviously it's been around forever. There's multifamily. There's just so many different routes you can take. What was it about self-storage that really appealed to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. There were a lot of things about landlording that I didn't love. Even after I outsourced it, there were just aspects from a personal personality standpoint that didn't jive with me. I was in the subsidized housing arena, so collections were a big hassle. And the expenses were hard to control. You know, we were spending half of every dollar that we collected on operating expenses, which is normal in the multifamily world. Mm-hmm. And basically I looked around and I wanted to find something where the fundamentals that I learned in real estate would apply, but those pain points would be addressed. For example, in storage, our income to expense ratio is 30 to 33 cents of the dollar.
Okay.
So there's a margin there. We don't have evictions in the storage world. We have lien laws, which was the elimination of another very big pain point for me. Yeah. And so it checked the boxes. Now, don't get me wrong. That doesn't mean that storage is all roses and whatnot. There's certainly challenges.
Okay.
But comparatively speaking, in my estimation, they're considerably easier to handle than the challenges I was having as a landlord.
I mean, the first things that come to mind, and admittedly, I know enough to be dangerous about it. I'm certainly not the expert you are in self-storage, but you obviously don't have toilets. You don't have tenants, right? I mean, so right there, it's a little bit of a different animal. So it sounds like from a property management perspective, not that there's not work involved, it's just you don't have the same challenges you do with single family or maybe even multifamily.
Exactly right. I mean, you look what our buildings are made of. 9 times out of 10, they're metal walls, metal roofs on a concrete slab.
Okay.
The only thing that can break is a spring, and they're $24 plus labor to fix. So we don't have the we just don't have the same expenses that you see when you're, when you have a house that's made of tenants or made of toilets, sinks, HVAC, all of these, you know, drywall damage is a whole lot easier than my metal siding. Right.
Right. Right.
So all of those things just, they create stronger underlying financial fundamentals.
Okay.
And that's why you see in the storage world, this is hard to believe, but self-storage loans, so commercial mortgages that are backed by a self-storage asset, default less often than any other mortgage-backed asset on the planet, including...
Why is that?
Because of that underlying income to expense ratio.
Okay.
The fact that it's just the money in and the money out is so favorable to the operator, as are the laws relative to collecting what's due to us and removing customers that, you know, we don't have a 3 to 6 month eviction process. Mm-hmm. We've got a 30 to 60 day auction process that results in us getting paid.
Yeah.
Opposed to us paying attorneys to get our house back from the tenant who's holding it hostage.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's right. Interesting. My wife years ago, she, every now and then, we don't watch a ton of TV, but every now and then my wife would watch Storage Wars, you know, and we'd see it's about, you know, obviously these units that I guess were foreclosed on, right? Is that's the best when they sell off the contents of the storage unit?
Exactly.
Okay. Got it. What are for somebody listening to this, I mean, you know, a majority of the audience is, as you know, made up of wholesalers, fix and flip investors, buy and hold investors, a lot of single family investors. And while we've covered many different niches, you know, over the course of the 3.5 years we've been doing the show, I'm curious, what are some of the pitfalls of getting involved with self-storage investing? I mean, I certainly don't want to make it sound like it's anybody can just jump into it and start experiencing success right away. But what are some of the things if somebody is listening to this and says, you know, I've never considered self-storage investing. It sounds interesting. What would you advise are steps 1, 2, and 3? I mean, obviously they have to connect with someone like you, educate themselves, but I'm curious more, what are the pitfalls and what are some of the challenges that you've experienced?
Yeah. And you know, the industry certainly has nuances, right? I think the biggest pitfall and my hope is that your listeners don't fall into this category because they're probably more sophisticated than this. But a lot of new investors think that self-storage is just mailbox money, that build it and they'll come. And and that was true in the 80s. Like you could put one of these places up in a cornfield and do really well.
That's crazy. But
the industry has matured, right? And it's considerably more sophisticated now. And so you've got to have a good handle on supply and demand. You've got to understand that you've got to position yourself such that the customers, when they decide they need storage, they're going to find you first, right? Okay. So there's also an immediacy to our customers' needs. Whereas if you have a 2-bedroom apartment you want to rent out, and the phone rings during dinner, you can ignore that call. If you call them back in the morning during business hours, it's not likely they found their apartment, right? You haven't lost that customer. In the storage world, it's quite likely that customer is gone forever if we don't service them immediately.
Got it.
Back in the day, I did that myself until I got smart enough and figured out that there were systems I could put in place to answer those calls and move people in on my behalf.
Okay.
But that being said, those are the things that get people in trouble if they subscribe to the old mentality of, well, let's just put up a row of garages and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Interesting. And Mike, we don't have to get into the details of like your finances. That's not what I'm asking here, but I want to kind of whet people's appetite to, from a cash flow perspective, if somebody is interested in self-storage, what does that look like? Like, I'm curious what your team looks like, how many units you have, and just kind of ballpark. And I realize this is a very vague general question, but like what's possible because the expense to income ratio is a lot lower than it is in some other commercial spaces. I'm curious what's typical in the self-storage world from a cash flow perspective.
Yeah. And that is a hard question to answer. You're absolutely right. But I think if I share some experience, it's going to depend on how you buy, right? There are lots of ways to invest in storage. You can go out and buy a turnkey facility, right? And if you buy it at a fair price, it's quite likely that you can cash flow thousands of dollars a month right from the start without doing much. That is not the strategy that I take. I'm a value add investor. So we look to find properties that are struggling, 0 to 50% full. And my role is to identify the cause of their challenges and then determine if I can fix it. And if that's the case, my rough rule of thumb is I want to at least double, if not triple, the value of the property in 24 to 48 months.
Got it. Got it. Okay. When you say value add, what are some typical reasons that I'm assuming you're targeting mom and pop storage investors? Okay. Middle America, I'm guessing.
Yes, we're shopping from mom and pops. And to answer your question, it is 9 times out of 10, strictly a management issue.
Okay. Management.
The same things that create opportunity in any real estate, right? They talk about the 4Ds and those things we'll often see. Inherited properties, properties oftentimes that were quite profitable at one point and something changed and now they're not. And so our role is just to step in and return them to their former glory, right?
Yeah, right, right. How long does that turnaround typically take? Let's say you come across a facility that's, I think you mentioned 50% occupied earlier on in the show. How long might something like that take to turn around if it's a property management issue?
Yeah, so I'm always a under promise and over perform kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
And so I tend to be relatively conservative. I'll use a very quick example. I bought a property April of 2018. It was 40% full. And I brought in two investors. And my promise to them was, not promise, my projection for them was, I think we can move in X number a month. We're looking at a 36-month play here. I can't take credit for it. Certainly, finding the deal, there was some value there, and I understood that I was being conservative, but we met that 36-month projection in month three.
Month three.
It's now, we've owned it for 18 months, and it's worth $1.4 million. We paid $465 for it.
Incredible. More than triple the value. That's amazing.
Now, I would never promise that I could do that again.
Of course, yeah.
But it's the upside that we're exposing ourselves to when we mitigate risk and buy properties right.
Sure. A couple questions that immediately come to mind is the first, and I'll kind of just throw them both together here. I'll dump them on your lap and you can tackle whichever one you prefer. How are you typically targeting these mom and pop investors? Is it, you know, usual direct mail strategies? Is there any type of cold calling involved? I'm curious how much overlap there is between the marketing we do on the single family side to how you target and reach the mom and pop investors. And the second question I wanted to ask you was, let's say you're buying a 100-unit facility or 150-unit facility. How many team members and or employees are needed to run and operate a facility like that?
Sure. So let me hit the first question first. And the answer is yes, we do all those things. I found properties listed. That Florida property, if you can believe it, was a listed property. I have no clue how somebody else didn't snatch it up before I did, but we always look at the listed properties. I also do direct mail. And right now, where storage is kind of a buzzword and everybody's thinking about maybe doing it, the listings tend to be a little more picked over. And so direct mail is probably my favorite strategy in today's market.
Okay.
Cold calling can also be very profitable. I prefer to, just because I'm a stickler for efficiency, I prefer to do direct mail first and then I cold call any undeliverables.
Okay.
Because my mentality is if I'm having a hard time getting a letter delivered, so is everybody else. And my chances of finding a deal in that population is higher.
Very smart. Very smart.
The one thing I'll touch on just to kind of hammer home, I believe very strongly that storage is a vehicle, right? It's a means to an end. I'm always aware of the fact that there's a risk. It could overtake the more important things in life if I don't always remind myself that it's just a means to an end. And the end that I have very generically is to create the most awesome life I can, right? And that means different things for me than it will for you or your listeners. But generally speaking, I think we can all agree we want an awesome life. And so when I invest in a property, when I send direct mail, I don't typically send them all over the country. The reason we own a property in Florida is because it's 90 minutes from Disney World. And my wife insists that we spend a month a year with Mickey Mouse.
That's I love it.
More time than I need with the mouse. And so, right. But I get to take a break midway through our vacation, go up and I can touch my property. So it's less disruptive to own a property there than it would be if I just randomly bought a property in Alabama or California, where I'd have to get on three planes, experience jet lag, and take a week out of my life, right? So again, that's the buying in Florida would have non-financial consequences. That buying in Florida, those consequences are minimized, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And let me tell you, so there's two quotes that you said that I wrote down that I'm going to steal, and I use that word lightly, and I definitely credit you. Non-financial consequences of our financial decisions and practicality is often a disguise for fear. Absolutely love those two quotes. And I want to, I'm going to let you answer as far as the team members. And then I want to circle back to really the heart of what I wanted to get at in this episode. This has all been very, very interesting. And obviously, my friends, there's only so much we can cover about self-storage on a 30 to 45 minute podcast. The intent here is not to go super, super deep with self-storage investing, but more just to kind of scratch the surface, let you know what's possible. Mike is obviously a friend and an expert. And if you want to go deeper here, you know, he just had, I think, a 3-day event. Where a really good friend of ours and my partner with Ascend, Steve Cavanaugh, just raved about. And so there's definitely an opportunity to connect with Mike if you want more information about that. But Mike is a lifestyle guy. And I love that you just mentioned, you know, your wife wants to spend a month with Mickey Mouse. And so you figured out how to make that happen and at the same time use the business as a vehicle, use self-storage as a vehicle to accomplish that. Because family and lifestyle is what's most important to you. So I want you to go ahead and answer that as far as the team members are concerned. And then I want to dive into that because I think when I think of you, I think self-storage and I think lifestyle, you know?
Absolutely.
So yeah.
And I'll tell you, I'm a keep it simple, stupid kind, or keep it stupid, simple. I don't know what I am, but I tend to keep things real simple because the old me liked to complicate things and get too cute. And that never worked out the way I thought it would. And so I have zero employees. I run six companies. One of them is a coaching company. The other ones are all storage facilities that I either own a majority of or all of. And I have zero employees.
Incredible.
I have vendors, of course, and I have someone local to each property. But the tasks required on site are surprisingly minimal. We're talking once a property's up and running, and there's more work in the beginning, don't get me wrong. But once a property's up and running and the systems are in place, what I call the boots on the ground, that's the guy or gal who helps me on site, 1 to 2 hours a week.
Wow.
Is what they do. And they're not an employee, they're a contractor. I don't dictate when they go there. I just let them know the roles and responsibilities I want them to fill for me. And then I overpay them because it's really hard to find a good contractor who will be good and is only willing to work 1 to 2 hours a week, right? So this is supplemental income on the side. And the way you keep them committed and give them a degree of motivation to stay is by paying $25 and $30 an hour for $10 to $12 an hour work.
Okay. Okay. And you find that the fact that they, even though they're working only a couple hours a week, that's enough to make them happy.
Yes. And essentially it's a, I don't keep track of their time. I'm paying them for the tasks that are completed. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's 4 or 5 hours a week. Sometimes it's less. Okay. Oftentimes I find that they'll spend more time than they need to justify the fact that I'm paying them double what they kind of anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Well, Mike, I mean, the fact that you have, you said six companies, you know, your coaching business and you have these different facilities with different partners, the fact that you have zero employees. And so at the time of this recording, we're not currently publishing the video. So, but at some point, I will be launching a YouTube channel. So right now you can't see Mike, but if and when you do, Mike looks so relaxed, so chill. You look like a surfer just having a good time with life, man. And so juxtapose that to like where I was 3 months ago. You know, I had a team of 8, which by many people's standards is still a small team. I have been so focused on simplifying and less is more and cutting cost and overhead. I've gone from 8 team members to 5. I've cut out several thousand dollars a month in expenses that just weren't really needed. And my stress level has gone. I was never really super stressed, but it significantly decreased my stress level. And so I think what I'm trying to really share and hopefully comes across is less is more. Bigger isn't always better. Better is better. You know what I mean? And so many people, it's about grow and scale and make more money. That's not the mindset you and I have. Yes, we want to make money, but it's about, we have a vision for our lives. And I know that's one of the things we share. And so talk a little bit about that. You know, you kind of touched on it with the fact that you mentioned, hey, my wife wants to spend a month out of the year with Mickey Mouse. I bought a facility in Florida an hour away. And so that checks off some boxes. Talk about, you know, the process you went through to really hone in on what you want for your life. You said you wanted an awesome life. I'm curious what process you went through to figure out, because so many people I talk to, Mike, can't even answer what they truly want out of life. Like they kind of the deer in headlights look.
Right.
And you know, it's that classic quote, more people spend time planning a vacation than they do their life. So I'm curious the process you went through to figure out, hey, this is the awesome life I want to live, and how you strategically went about attaining that lifestyle.
Yeah, and I will give full credit to Life and Air, the organization that kind of introduced me to the concept and the idea that unless you define success for yourself, and they would tell you in the form of a written vision, you're going to chase society's definition of success, which, as you so accurately said, is more is better. And I just don't subscribe to that. I subscribe to the idea that better is better. With Life and Air, I went through a series of exercises that allowed me to really do the soul searching and dial in what my core values are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was kind of concurrently with my exploration into self-storage. These things, storage kind of gave me the financial freedom, or at least the financial wherewithal initially, to invest some time and money into figuring out what a awesome life looks like. And you know, so for me, that's, you know, there are certain things that I value, you know, adventure, travel, my family, my faith, all of these things are important. But as storage has, the way I describe it is, it's given me this space to work on me. And that is essentially me refining these values, right? It's hard to do that if you're stuck in the rat race juggling bills. It's important to carve out some time, but it's very easy as you make more and more money to let your lifestyle inflate along with it. And then you never experience that space or that freedom.
Right.
And so I've just tried to remain intentional about that. And I now see my purpose literally on this earth to serve as a conduit where all of the blessings that I'm so fortunate to experience, storage being one of them, I want them to flow through me, right? In one side and out the other, and in a perfect world, be amplified in some way.
Right?
I don't want to be accused of being the bottleneck of any of the awesomeness that comes into my world. That's all it is.
That's amazing. I've always subscribed to the thought that, you know, we need to be a funnel for quality information, you know, like, and I've had so many coaches and mentors that have poured into my life, walked alongside me. And part of my goal with this podcast and in our main goal with Ascend, our coaching and mastermind group, is to be that funnel, to be that conduit, as you put it. And I know that's, let me modify that. Not I know, it seems like that's what storage has done for you. Yes, it's been a vehicle for you to live your life, but what you're doing with your coaching program, right? What you're doing teaching others the self-storage business. And you just shared with me before we started recording, you just had your first 3-day event the way that in this particular format. And I asked you, I said, you know, what was it like? And you said it was interesting because we spent obviously time talking about self-storage, but there was also a lot of mindset talk. And so that proves to me right there that it's not just about acquiring a bunch of facilities and, you know, a bunch of cash flow, but you're using this as a platform to pour into others. And that really resonates with me. So, definitely, you know, kudos to you. I want to publicly acknowledge you for that, because it's not just about building a big coaching business and making more money, but you're leveraging this platform and the skills you've acquired to help other people live the kind of life they want. I think that's just awesome.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, and I will let that land on me. I do appreciate hearing it. But quite frankly, I feel that it's a responsibility and an obligation, not in a negative sense. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe the things that I have, the money I've made in storage, the knowledge, I don't believe that those belong to me. I believe that I've been trusted with them, and it's my responsibility to share it with others. And so that's really why I designed the coaching program. The truth is, you nailed it. If it were all about nuts and bolts storage information, anyone with any degree of interest could jump on YouTube or Facebook, whether my page or somebody else's, and all of that nuts and bolts information I share freely.
Yeah.
And yet I still have more students than I can handle in my coaching program. One, because I'm very conscious about not spreading myself too thin and making sure my wife and kids remain at the top of my priority list.
Boundaries.
But those are, it's that other 80% aside from the nuts and bolts that really is the key to success in my estimation anyways.
Unbelievable, brother. Very cool, man. So last couple of questions before we wind down here. How important, I know the answer to this, but I kind of was hoping you'd elaborate a little bit. How important has coaching, putting yourself in the right environment, whether it's the mastermind you're in, the coaches that have poured into you, the friends that we have, you know, whether it's somebody like Steve Cavanaugh or others in your life, how important have those people been to, I'm careful to say your success. That's not, I'm struggling to find the right word, but to live the kind of life you want. I mean, obviously you've put in the work, right? But it wasn't by accident. You know, you've had to go out and make investments of time, investments of money. How important has that been to just the quality of your life, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's been critical. I don't know. There are a few things that I would put above that as important as far as growing, not only as a businessman, but as a person. And having the right people help you identify the limiting beliefs or the habits that you have that they might be destructive or they might just not be optimal, right? Having other people see that stuff and help you identify it and then working together to formulate some sort of corrective strategy is, I mean, I can't overstate how important it is. I am so thankful for my coaches, the formal ones, the ones I pay on a regular basis, as well as, you know, the other members of the masterminds that I'm a part of. We all subscribe to this idea that a rising tide lifts all ships. And so if I'm in a position to help someone, I know the saying that my coach uses a lot is you can't outgive the system, right? So though I'd love to be altruistic and I don't keep score and I just want to help you any way I can, there's no way for that not to be reciprocated upon me in some way, even if it's just the joy of knowing I made a difference, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And brother, that mindset right there is just a part of the reason you're so successful. And a part of the reason that you just touched on it, you know, you didn't spend all this time talking about self-storage, but it's about mindset. It's about living a better life. And you put out all the technical stuff for free that people can go get on your page, which we'll have a link in the show notes. That's why it's full. That's why people come to you because they want to be in that environment. They realize that success breeds success. And so, I'm glad, man. I just wanted to really get your perspective on that because I think sometimes the people that listen to the show on a regular basis, it might sound like white noise because they've heard it from me so much. And I think it's always interesting coming from a different angle and from somebody who's obviously achieved a high level of success based on your definition, not society's or somebody else's. And so, man, as we wind down here, one of the last questions I always end with is, you're a young guy. I don't even know how old you are, but you're a young dude. Rewind the clock 15 years. Knowing what you know now, what's the one piece of advice you would share with the young Mike Wagner that you think might benefit the audience and the people listening to this?
Ooh, that's a deep one. And I'll go vulnerable real quick. I will fully admit that for the first 30 to 35 years of my life, I based my self-worth on achievement, right? So I was only good as my last finish line or accomplishment, my success. And full disclosure, that allowed me to accomplish and achieve some really cool stuff. I mean, I've done Boston Marathon, a couple of Ironmans, 3 degrees. I have a doctoral degree. It all contributed to who I am today. But at the same time, I was never comfortable in my own skin. And so if I could convince that 23-year-old version of me that my self-worth was God-given and and was more dependent on my commitment to doing right and doing well and living right and living well, as opposed to achieving and impressing others and that sort of thing, man, if I could convince, forget about the 23-year-old version of me, if I could have one person hear that out of my lips and have them internalize it and truly understand that their worth isn't dependent on what the rest of this world thinks of them, I would call this time really well spent.
I could literally just cut out that minute to 2 minutes, publish that. And I think it's so well worth it, man. I think that's, if people hang on those last words and nothing else that's been shared and a lot has been valuable, I think that could dramatically impact the direction and course of somebody's life. I truly do believe that. So, brother, it's been a pleasure, man. I've loved watching you grow from afar. And I know that you and I will get closer, as we just move forward, right? Because we think alike, and I know that we both have a deep desire to impact people and help others. We might do it in different ways, but I think our hearts are in the right place. And so for anybody that is interested in self-storage or just talking mindset, just kind of getting to know you, where's the best place to connect, reach out, and just start building a relationship with you?
Yeah, I would say there's probably three primary places to find me: YouTube and Facebook. Either platform, you can just search at Storage Rebellion. And YouTube is a little more nuts and bolts stuff. Facebook, some nuts and bolts, but a little more lifestyle mindset stuff. And then my website, thestoragerebellion.com, is a good place for people to explore. There's a free webinar, some free case studies, that sort of thing for people to try to start to get to know me. And then if they want to connect more deeply, I'm certainly open to that as well.
Very cool, brother. Well, hey man, I don't know if you have any parting thoughts here. Again, we'll include all this in the show notes page, but this has been an absolute pleasure. I can't wait for people to just listen to this, because I know it's really going to resonate with a lot of people. I know the fabric and DNA of the audience and the listeners, and this is the type of message they want to hear. And for those that might not want it, this is the type of message they need to hear, because like we said, bigger isn't always better. In fact, just better is better. And so I think you embody that along with so many other things. So really appreciate you, my friend.
No, I appreciate you, man. No parting words other than to say thank you. Gratitude is not strong enough a word for you providing me with a platform to have the impact that I'm trying to have on this world, and for what you do week in and week out with your podcast. I think it's awesome. And so thank you.
I appreciate you, my friend. So guys, thank you so much. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what's the top takeaway that Mike shared that really connected with you and landed home. And again, it's what you do with what you heard. You've taken the first step to make the time investment to listen to this. But it's what you're going to do with the information that can determine if you go left or right. And so I genuinely appreciate you taking the time, and how you can really pay us back is what you do with this information. So love you, appreciate you guys, and we'll connect in the next one.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.